The presenting sponsor of Moon Tower Soccer is FVF Law.
To find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm, you can visit FVF.law.
Hello, friends. Thanks for listening to Moon Tower Soccer. This week, Austin FC 2 have advanced to the MLS Next Pro Final. The first team plays their last game of the season. We're going to talk about all of that, plus our thoughts on the Rodolfo Borrell press conference that happened earlier this week. My name is Landon Cottom, and I'm joined, as always, by Mr. Jeremiah Bentley.
Hey, everybody. I'm Jeremiah Bentley. And I think, actually, it's funny. Yesterday, we were talking about if we were going to have anything to discuss on the show this week, and it took about 5 minutes to realize that even though a year is today is very different than today was a year ago. Like, there's a lot to cover. So I'm really excited to get into this. And I think it's kind of good to not have a game where we can sort of explore some of these topics and some of this news in more depth. But, you know, as I said, like, what a difference a year makes. Because 1 year ago today, we were all at Q2 Stadium watching Sebastian Driussi score a goal in extra time to take a match to penalties. And then Brad Stuver managed to pull one out for Austin with a playoff victory, which Austin will not be pursuing this year at all.
Yeah, that was that feels like a lifetime ago at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, so you saw, because you never get enough soccer in your life, so you also saw another match this weekend. Is that right? Did you go watch the academies?
I just won academy.
Just
team.
One.
So
okay.
Most of them were in Dallas playing, but for whatever reason, the U14s were here in town. They played a scrimmage against Lone Star, which is one of the other bigger academies here in town. I had not seen this age group play, and so it was fun to get to watch another group. I tend to stick to the older ones just because they're the ones who are closer to the first team. It's also just more fun to watch the older ones play. But these U14s, they were actually a lot of fun to watch. And I think for anyone who gets nervous about watching Brad Stuver play out of the back and kind of play risky out of the back, the U14 goalkeeper for Austin FC in the first half, they had a ton of the ball. And I think he spent about 80% of the first half outside of his own 18. And so wow. It was like nowhere near his goal. And a lot of that had to do with just Austin had the other team pinned into the attacking area. But then at one point, someone loses a ball while playing out of the back, and the keeper is way off his line. And instead of retreating to the goal line, he goes in and wins a 50-50 and takes the ball off of one of their attackers and then plays the ball forward again. So anybody who's thinking that this is just a Brad Stuver thing, this is not going anywhere.
It's the system. So what do you call that? A sweeper keeper? Is that what we have now?
Yeah. I think this kid was doing it to a degree that the coach would probably not be very happy with, but definitely telling him to play boldly.
Well, we had, like, we've talked about the fairly busy week. We had our, I think one of the main things that we'll spend a lot of time on is this Rodolfo Borrell press conference, because that happened 1 week ago from when the show comes out, but we haven't had the chance to discuss it on the show. While we did a bunch of tweeting about it. Then we also have some other Austin FC news. So let's get into that. We saw Leo Väisänen play, he started, right? Started for Finland and their 3-0 loss to Slovenia in the Euro qualifiers. What would you say were his highlights of his performance on the night?
I didn't get to watch this whole game. I was out at the pitch, and I went out like outside of the stadium, and they had it on a TV there, and got to watch maybe, I don't know, 20 or 30 minutes of it. Väisänen gave up a penalty for Slovenia's first goal. He was a little too aggressive in stepping in to try to win an interception in the box, didn't notice the attacker on his shoulder, and just kind of clashes into him right as the ball is arriving. So unfortunate there, maybe a little bit of misjudgment on his part, but overall, from what I saw, it looked like Slovenia just kind of outclassed Finland overall, which I don't think is a big surprise just based on their talent pools. But they are playing Kazakhstan on Tuesday, which is the day this show comes out. And then I'm guessing he'll hop right on a plane and then come back to Austin as soon as that one's over. So in other news, we talked about Owen Wolf kind of making shortlists. He was officially voted to the MLS 22 under 22 last week as well. I think he finished 18th on the list. Is that right?
He is, and that's right. But I didn't realize that they ranked the 22, 1 through 22, but yes, he was number 18.
They voted and then rank whoever gets the most votes, and he ended 18th on this list out of the 22. But is, again, like we said this last week, he is one of the younger players on this list as well, and is eligible to win this for the next three seasons. So good to see him getting recognized there. Anything else before we move on to the press conference, Jeremiah?
No, let's go ahead and get to the press conference, because it was interesting in and of itself being there, and then just sort of reading reactions to quotes and reactions to the video. I think there's a lot to unpack out of it.
Yeah, so I think the things that we knew last week, I don't think there's any, like, there's few like big things that we learned new, but there are some things. And then I think a lot of little things that are interesting to discuss. So I think the main headlines here, he once again doubles down on Josh Wolf, like saying, this is the guy. We'll get into that more here in a second. Hyped up his new scouting department, said they're hiring 5 scouts. They already announced that in the press release from last Sunday. He said that we'll get to learn those people's names and kind of their backgrounds and pedigrees as soon as the season is over. But in a press conference full of kind of like managing expectations, this is one moment where he was like hyping these guys up. He's like, you're going to be impressed when you see these guys. Trust me.
Yeah. But then do you think the other part where he talked about where the place he came from, they had 80 scouts, and now talking about having 5 really good scouts. Then we're 16 scouts, my friend, each.
Yeah. And then I think like my biggest takeaway from this is, I kind of just mentioned it, but setting expectations. I think he spent a lot of time and effort trying to just make sure that everyone understands what this roster build is going to look like going forward and how long it's going to take, more importantly.
Yeah, and I like that you said setting expectations. I would have gone with lowering expectations, maybe, is my definition for it. So if you look, and we're going to get into this off-season schedule and what we might want to do. And I would say if you expect a dramatic overhaul of this roster during the offseason outside of the league, like, he definitely dispelled any of those notions. I mean, to the point where he said, somebody, I think it was Moises, specifically asked about Emiliano Rigoni and like, could he be bought down and things be done with him? And he's like, we have no TAM, like literally no TAM. Like, we can't even do the things you're talking about with the player you talked about, which I appreciated him being responding to a real world example, but he was really hardcore on that. I felt like overall, I guess like any media coach person, he had like a few points that he wanted to make, and he just sort of made them over and over and over again. Yeah. So definitely the expectations thing, definitely backing up Josh Wolf, definitely his own pedigree and his own knowledge about coaching and background, I think is something he went back to a lot. And then, you know, he was just a little... That was interesting. I had the Sean Rubio question about, like, what are you going to do when Sean Rubio is gone? And he's like, it's fine. We got 2 guys in-house that already know this job. Like, we're not going to replace him. We don't need him, which I don't know. I thought maybe MLS is not as complicated as I think it is, because he seemed to really not care about whether we had, like, anybody that was, like, super attuned to the roster and the cap, other than continually telling the people in the media, like, we were obvious MLS roster experts, so we had to understand how complicated this all was.
Yeah, I was going to bring this up a bit later, but how did you take that? Him continually saying, you are all experts on this league. Like, what was your read on that?
You know, we should talk about the room too, because, you know, I don't know if, you know, people have the perspective of it, but like, if we were all in one row in a practice room, right? Like, it looked like a classroom where they taught.
It is where the kid, like the academy's kids, go to school during the day.
Yeah, because there was like instructions and like academy kids scheduled to watch. So there was probably what, 8-9 like reporters and then 3 cameras in the back. So it was a really intimate room. And he definitely like said hi to everybody and got to know everybody a little bit. But I don't know. I felt like it was a little condescending, honestly, about like obviously the way when he went back to it. Did you have a different take than that?
No, I mean, it felt like it was teetering on like trying to recognize that, like, I'm the new guy here. I know you guys all know a lot of this stuff. And also maybe being slightly condescending to saying like, I don't know, just say like, I know you guys talk about this all the time, so of course you're experts. Yeah, so, yeah. But I like honestly couldn't read which was more accurate. And maybe it's a little of both at the same time.
Yeah, maybe so. Like what were your other takeaways? Oh, I guess like setting expectations. Do you want to get into that? Because I think you had some notes about sort of the rebuild and what we should expect. Maybe go there.
I think the biggest quote pertaining to this was he kept saying, we're going to do as much as we can, not as much as we want, but as much as we can. And so like, what is like, there are several questions about what's the goal for this offseason? What does success look like? And he kept going back to that. It's like, we're going to do as much as we can and we are very limited. And so like, does that mean letting players go, trading players, selling players? None of those are guaranteed things. And so whenever we can do those things, we will. And we're going to try to build that over the next few transfer windows. But I can't tell you we're going to make this many signings or this many moves because we don't know if that's possible yet. And so we're going to take it as we come. We're going to improve as much as we can each window, but I can't tell you how much that is.
Yeah. And another thing that I thought on the windows was interesting is he talked about, I think everybody here wants like a big winter window because that's the off season. But he talks a lot. He's got a lot of reliance on Europe and talked a lot about the summer window being the window when people can really make moves, because that's when maybe the players that are going to be more attractive to him were available. So I think that was another way that he was sort of like lowering expectations in the short term. Another thing he said too over and over was like, this kind of touches on your Josh Wolf point. It's like, I'm building a long-term project that has to be sustainable for success. And he kind of went back to Austin overachieving in 2022 and maybe underachieving in 2023, but really talked about how like, this is a long-term project and I'm not going to overreact to results. Results are important, but I'm not going to overreact to results.
Yeah. Let's dig into him talking about Wolf for a little bit. So one quote that I had underlined here is, I have a responsibility beyond results. And so he kept emphasizing like a focus on the long term and every decision being a thoughtful one, trying not to be too reactive. And that when talking about Wolf, saying like there are a lot of cases where a coach isn't dedicated to the job, the players have given up, there's fighting in the locker room, a coach doesn't want to learn and is like fixed in his ideas, doesn't want to learn anything new. And he assured us in the room that like that's not the case here. And like that happens a lot more than you would think, but that is not happening here. And that's part of the reason why we're deciding to stick with this guy. He also referenced, without saying his name, but pretty sure he's talking about Jim Curtin, and references, I think Philadelphia were all of these veiled references, right?
I think, yeah, I believe so. Yeah. And cause I know those of you who haven't followed all the online chatter, like Jim Curtin's first 3 years are pretty similar, maybe not quite as good as Josh Wolf's first 3 years overall. And obviously Philadelphia turned out okay.
And this is a team that he's familiar with, because I think that was the first job that he was linked with in MLS was Philadelphia.
That's
and
correct.
So I think he probably knows a lot about them too. But yeah, said like there's a coach in the league, I won't name his name, but a lot of people wanted him fired, had a really bad run, but with time and support found success. And that goes on to talk about like how difficult MLS is, and like there are people who want to come and work here, but MLS experience is really important. And I think that was one of the bigger points he was trying to make by repeating all this stuff about MLS that we know, is that like the profile of a coach that he wants is someone who's going to put in the work, who's eager to learn. And that profile is hard to find, but he says like, we have that guy in Josh Wolf. And like, is there room to grow? Yes. But all of this other stuff is difficult to find. And I think we have it in the guy that we have now.
Yeah. And the other point, I don't believe you just said this, but one of the other things he talked about was among the things where you could tell is sort of a coach has lost a team. Like he talked about maybe the team quitting on a coach too, and said, which is something we speculated on a little bit, on what the locker room is like. And he said, like, that's not the case here for sure. That like Josh Wolf still has like the trust of the club, of the players.
I think this was an interesting question. This is, I'd also made sure to take notes on some of the responses that were in Spanish, just because I figured a lot of our listeners will have just kind of missed those entirely. But one of them was about if expectations would be higher next year. And if say we we lose several games in a row. Are you ready to like pull that trigger and fire him? And he very confidently said, like, I'm only thinking in the positives, and like, we will of course reflect deeply on this season once the season is over, and we'll have a lot of time to work together, and we will like reflect on the season. That's like the natural way to evolve from this point. But we believe in this coach, we believe in this coaching staff, and they are the way forward. And so again, doubling down on it over and over and over. And I think last week we kind of talked about how maybe he's talking up Wolf publicly, but in reality, he is building a team for his style and thinks that Wolf is good enough for the moment. After this press conference, he once again, like, is more and more every time he talks publicly is attaching his own reputation to Josh Wolf and Josh Wolf's growth as a coach. I come out of it now thinking like, maybe it is true to a degree that like, this is a bigger plan. He knows that like, maybe he believes Wolf isn't the right guy, but he's doing the right, like, coaching, like the right mold of coach that he wants, and can build this team while playing this style, and then at some point in the future, bring in somebody else. I think there's still a very real possibility that's the case. But I also like kind of believe that like he views Josh Wolf as like a mission for himself. He's like, I'm gonna grow this guy into a great coach. And like, do you think that's true?
I could see a little of that just with the way he talked about him. He talked about him being young over and over and over again, right?
Yeah.
And how talked about him being young, talked about him being a student, told a story about him getting home from a game at 4 a.m. and getting back into the before 9 a.m. being back at St. David's Performance Center on that late game super night, like super late night. Like he continues to go out of his way to say things specifically about Josh Wolf that made me think it's not just about the type of coach, but Josh Wolf.
Yeah. This next section I have here is titled, I tried to do like a, like, you remember like Rocky and Bullwinkle episodes would have two titles, or like a Buster Keaton, like silent movies.
Yeah.
Would be like this title or this title. So I titled this The Rebuild or Subtly and Indirectly Blaming Claudio Reyna. And so this is more notes about like the plan for the rebuild, this new scouting department. And then just like the very, I thought pretty skillful way of like saying this is the former administration's fault without like being too harsh about it. Do you think that's true, or am I giving him too much credit?
Well, I mean, he wasn't direct. He did not directly call the previous leadership out, but it's, yeah, it was thinly veiled at most.
Yeah. So here's a quote from one of these sections. He says, in a salary cap environment, you have to be very smart, I think is one of the pieces we are missing here. And that's a line that I didn't quite absorb the first time through, but I went back and rewatched it. I was like, oh, that's like not veiled at all. That's saying like, you have to have smart player movement. You have to be active in the player movement market. And that's not happening here. It's saying the people before me weren't doing their job. And then in a question about like, I think this was kind of saying like a team that spent a lot of money, how do you justify keeping this coach when a team that like has spent a lot of resources in trying to provide talent? And he kind of snapped back and said, this part was in Spanish as well. It's like, it's not what we spend, it's how we spend it. And like to say like, yeah, we spent a lot of money, but we did a bad job of it. And like, that's not the important part. It's like being smart, minimizing errors. And this was going back to his scouts. Like when you talk about like, yeah, at Manchester City, we had 80 scouts. Mind you, this is for probably all of City Football Group, and they're scouting for, I don't know how many teams they own. It's like 6 to 10 or something like that. And so like, that is probably larger than even other Premier League club networks, but he emphasized like, we're starting with 5, but they are like the right 5 guys. And that's what's really important. It's like, they're not just experienced and have really good backgrounds, but they are people who know what we want, the profile of player we want, and know how to find players that are going to fit into what we're doing. And I think the back side of that that was not said as clearly is like, that hasn't been happening as of so far in this team. It's like, we've brought in some players, but I don't think all of them have been guys who are actually going to fit with what we want to do. And that's been a big problem.
And I don't think anybody would deny that part of the discussion before, right? Like, that's,
yeah,
I don't think we talked about this last week, but you know, Austin was one of the top five teams in salary last year. So it's not that there's like not, and almost none of those teams did very well. So like, there's a lot of dumb spending around this league, but I don't think that part's particularly controversial. So you have this thing written that says controversial bits. Are there, what were your favorite maybe moments that generated some online controversy or chaos during the press conference?
Well, I don't know that this is maybe my own personal controversial bit, or like my like surprising moment. You kind of referenced it when you asked about Sean Rubio, and he's like, "Ah, we're good without him." I was like, "Whoa, okay." Yeah. And I'm still very curious. I was looking through the like personnel page on the Austin FC website, and I'm very curious, like who specifically
the two
are the
guys?
People.
Because he said specifically, like, oh, we got two people that have been learning. So, like, who were those people?
Yeah, because it's like, it's pretty slim when you're looking at like people involved in like any type of scouting or personnel decisions. There's not that many. And most of them seem to not really be of the like of lower tier jobs where they wouldn't necessarily be decision makers. And so I'm curious if he's like including coaching staff in this, or are like, I don't know, like the data analyst, maybe they have more of a say in that than we ever knew. I don't completely doubt that, like maybe he has like a more of an understanding that you talked about the, like him talking about Tam. He gave us a little flex by citing the exact number of Max Tam, which is the thing, like, I forget it most of the time, and it's not like a round number. It's like a different digit in every slot of the 1.67853 or whatever it is. And he cited it specifically. And so like, maybe he does know it well enough that he doesn't need that much help. I don't know, but he very much did not seem bothered by the fact that Sean Rubio is not going to be here to help him with that. I think other controversial bits, this things that I saw people maybe take offense to for various reasons is, I think this is partially translation stuff, but he said, "I know what I'm talking about," several times when like talking about coaches. I think it maybe played a little more cocky than he meant it. In that specific thing, but he did go back and reference talking about like the clubs that he comes from. How did that strike you, like him mentioning his pedigree like that?
Well, I think, yeah, I think he had it was cool that he talked for 58 minutes. Like that was, I don't know, it's the longest press conference I've been a part of for sure.
Yeah, and I was rewatching it the other day, and my wife walked past and she was like, "He talks too much." And I was like, yeah, you're probably right, but I'd rather him talk too much than not enough.
Yeah. And so I feel like there were a lot of things he repeated, because I feel like there were just specific points he wanted to make that you just wanted to drive home over and over again. And there were four or five of them, that being one of them. Did he need to say all those as much as he did? I don't know. I mean, I could tell you one thing that I left that press conference. You know, I sort of left the first one, the June one, thinking like, oh, well, this is a guy saying the right things about the situation of the coach. Like, I left this one being like, no, I 1,000,000% buy that these thoughts about the roster, about Josh Wolf, about everything else, are like Rodolfo Burrell's real and authentic thoughts. And I think the fact that he kept going back to those points over and over again is what made me think that. So, I mean, maybe he did a little bit too much, but that was not the only thing he said four or five times. So I don't know why people necessarily just honed on to that one and not all the other things.
And I think like if he came from a different background and different experience of working with coaches, like I might read this as arrogance, but in this case, like he's just stating a true fact that he has worked at some of the best clubs in the world and he has worked with some of the best coaches in the world. This is not hyperbole. Like this is a fact. And so if you like, he started at Barca at the end of the Johan Cruyff era there when he was the manager, worked under Sir Bobby Robson, considered one of the best English managers of all time. Louis van Gaal, which I know has like a different reputation in the modern era, but at one time he was considered one of the best coaches in Europe. Frank Rijkaard in like a kind of a resurgent period for Barcelona. And then not to mention coaches that he worked alongside as assistants or as their players. So Guardiola, Mourinho, Rafa Benitez, Mikel Arteta was a player while he was at Barca and then worked with him again at Manchester City. And so like, again, like I think there are several things that you can question Borrell's expertise on because he's never been in this position at any club. He's never been in MLS. And so I think there are reasons to maybe be a little bit wary, but his background as far as coaching stuff, like we just have to give him that one, I think. I think the other thing was like him talk, we already kind of touched on this, but him talking about like how difficult MLS is. And like, again, like this, everyone's playing in that same field. And so I feel like he like hit that one a little too many times.
I would agree that would seem a little bit odd just because of what you said. And I think it's something that anybody covers this league or is like a real fan of this league also knows and understands too, right? It's kind of a basic MLS point. How many times have you seen the map of England overlaid over the state of Texas when people are complaining about, you know, going from the north end to the south end for a road game and like comparing that to what Austin FC gets for traveling fans?
Yeah. I think one of the other things that I saw that maybe people weren't very happy with was him saying like, you wouldn't believe the names of players and coaches who want to come here. And I was like, oh, this is going to get a lot of play on Twitter, isn't it? But like, I don't know. Like I think especially people who are like very much don't want Josh Wolf to be the coach anymore. And to hear him say like, wait, you're saying you do have other options available.
Right.
I thought that one was going to take off and it did, rightly
so. And it did. Yeah. And I felt that was, it was a line, but that was not one of the things he went back to over and over again. It's kind of something he said once and then moved on from.
That one was very much in support of his point that like, we want a coach that has MLS experience. But I think again, people were of course going to take that to say like, yeah, but you're saying there's really good coaches who want to come here right now.
Right.
I kind of have like another miscellaneous list here. You already kind of mentioned this, but he talks about him being the oldest guy in the room at the club. I think he said he's the second oldest person in the entire organization at 52 years old. All that. And he goes on to say like, there's a lot of energy in this club, great fan base, like a lot of energy amongst the staff, but everyone's super young. And it like that part, I think my takeaway there is like, he sees himself as like the adult in the room. And that also gives me comfort to know like there is an adult in the room now.
Yeah. Well, at least one that's going to act like one and not like the world's worst sports parent.
Yeah. I found it very charming that he kept forgetting words in Spanish and would just say them in English while he was speaking Spanish. And then I guess one other point that I have that I think it's a thing that I've tried to drive home on this show quite a bit. And I think he was saying this in Spanish as well. But asking about like, what is his role in kind of like mentoring Josh Wolf as a coach? Now, I know you're building out this roster, but what is your relationship to him as a coach?
You mean when Jorge was trying to poke him?
Yeah. And one of the things that he mentioned was like, obviously coaches get it wrong sometimes. Everybody makes mistakes. And like you make a sub in this game and you go on and win, you're the hero. If it doesn't work out, you're the villain. But what you don't see is what happens during the week that this player was sick for 3 days. This player, like the high performance staff is showing like this player is on the verge of an injury. If you push them too hard, like they're a pretty high risk at this moment. Players having family issues, weren't able to train like they needed to during the week. And those are things that like we as fans don't see during the week, but that decisions get made based on those things on a regular basis. And that just because like we don't understand it watching the game doesn't mean there's not a reason for it. And I think that's the thing that I like, I don't know. I really wish there was a lot more nuance as far as like fan response to certain things in viewing like players are people and that there's things going on in their lives that they're going to work every day just like we are. It's a much different job, but like things happen, things get in the way. And like just because you don't know about it doesn't mean it's not affecting what's going on the field.
I agree with that sitting here on Monday night, like philosophically, but it's just super hard, right? As a fan in the moment, and especially like right after a game or right when things go poorly or whatever, to like have that sense of perspective. So I also understand the overreaction that people tend to have.
Any other notes from the press conference, Jeremiah? Any other thoughts?
No, I think we hit on just about all of them. I think
what is your like overall takeaway then? Like the like big picture takeaway that you got from this?
I mean, we kind of hit it in the opening. I am 100% convinced more than ever that he is hitching his wagon to the Josh Wolf experiment and committed to like making it happen. I have no doubts about that. I think he is committed to being a long-term project. And I'm honestly, this we touched on this too early on, but I'm like a little bit worried about like sort of the lack of sort of the reliance on Europe and European style and maybe like sort of the disregard for some of the mechanics of MLS, even though he talked about them. But when he talked about players to be added or scouts or whatever, like it felt very European focused.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense just based on his background. But we've seen
like people come in from Europe and say that they know better and fail often. And that's, I think, one of the things that we had talked about not wanting. And I'm a little more worried about that being the case than I was going into that press conference.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think we just need to hope that he has been as much a student of MLS as he says he has been, and that has taken more notes from St. Louis than he did from year one Cincinnati.
Beautiful.
Because like you can, there is value in Europe. There is a good way to build a European centered team. But there have been maybe more bad ways to do it over the last 10 years or whatever. And I guess one question on your first point there is you said you're convinced that he's bought in to Josh Wolf. How does that make you feel? Like, do you feel better about Josh Wolf after hearing Burrell talk about him?
No, it makes me feel more nervous about Burrell.
I think that was a pretty widespread feeling.
Yeah, I don't think I'm alone, but for sure. He was brought in from Europe, probably paid a lot of money to build a club in his own image. And so, you know, it's not how I would do it, but I also didn't get hired to do the job.
Yeah. Well, the season will be over soon. Not sure like when movement will actually start happening, but I imagine like as early as next week, we could start hearing news about
people not coming back, right?
Like options not getting picked up or players' contracts expiring, things like that. But yeah, I mean, that's probably as most as we'll hear then, and that may even take a few weeks to start coming out, just kind of depending on what's actually going on with those contracts. But all that to say, I think there will be a lot of movement this offseason, and I think probably more than he's letting on. I think he's probably lowering expectations intentionally to then maybe over deliver a little bit, but just out of necessity, like he's gonna have to sign a few players just to be able to fill out a roster with all the stuff we have potentially ending. And we'll talk about in the next segment about like who those guys are and what we would like to see the team do with them.
Well, that sounds like the perfect time to take a break and get into that discussion.
All right. Well, hang tight. We'll be right back. Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by our friends at FVF Law, the official injury lawyers of Austin FC.
FVF is a different kind of personal injury law firm dedicated to community, transparency, and client education. And I mentioned this to you off air. I've had a lot of stuff going on in our family over the last few weeks. And one of those things is put me in touch with one of my aunts, more than I normally am. And my aunt was in a car accident and used FVF Law and said that those guys were lifesavers. And the first thing she said to him was like, well, you're not on a billboard with a hammer on top of a semi truck. I don't like that about y'all. And has like loved all the service that FVF has provided and really appreciates them. So like, thanks from Aunt Deb to the FVF Law people.
You can go to FVF.law to find out what makes FVF a different kind of injury law firm and why understanding your legal options can dramatically change the outcome of a case. Once again, that's FVF.law. Amplify Credit Union is a member-owned financial cooperative that's served the needs of Central Texans for over 5 decades. Amplify's team lives and works in the community, making them the experts on how members can achieve their financial goals.
What makes Amplify different? No bank fees. Amplify is the first financial institution in Texas to put an end to bank fees. In 2022, Americans paid almost $8 billion in overdraft fees alone. Millennials pay an average of $336 a year in bank fees, which works out to 6 Austin FC game tickets per person per year. You'll pay none of those fees with Amplify Credit Union.
Amplify membership is open to any Texas resident. Learn to trust your bank again at Amplify Credit Union. To learn more, go to www.goamplify.com/moontower.
And we're again excited to talk about our premier sponsor, McGuire Woods Consulting, which helps companies and nonprofits navigate the political process at the Texas Capitol in Austin, at City Hall in Austin, and at the national level through lobbying, communication strategies, and general advocacy.
With offices across the country and in 10 MLS cities, including Austin, Houston, and Dallas, McGuire Woods Consulting is solidly verde and black. Learn more about our friends at McGuire Woods Consulting at mwcllc.com. All right, we are back. We are going to go through the roster and talk about which players we think Austin FC should try to keep around and which players they should not try to keep around. MLS announced their offseason calendar, I think last week. There's a lot of really confusing stuff on it. I think the biggest takeaway for the moment is that stuff will start to happen in December officially. Nothing probably official is going to happen before then, aside maybe, as we said before, like announcing that these players aren't coming back. But there is quite a bit of potential for movement in the Austin FC roster. So I think we're going to go through kind of a few categories of players. The first one being that like players whose contract is up or they're on an option year. And we'll say, do we want to re-sign those players? Do we want to let them walk? Then we'll go through some like kind of murky, unclear contract situations. And we'll say, what do we hope their contracts look like? Like, do we hope they're over or do we hope that there's another year on it? And then of the players who are still under contract, we'll maybe discuss a few names that we hope that the club is shopping and like trying to get rid of actively. Let's start with players whose contract is up. So tell me if I think I have this right. And I want to thank Long Cow from, he's a member of Los Verdes and a guy who has become a friend over this season. He did a lot of work in kind of digging up all the information. And I told him like, I've been planning on doing this for the last couple of weeks and now I just don't have to. And I just kind of copied over a lot of the information from his spreadsheet. So Long, thank you very much. I appreciate it. But I went through and kind of divided up like the players whose contracts are up. The ones that I think I have correct here are Brandon Craig. His loan is up. I don't think we have the option to renew that. So decision made. He's leaving. Maxi Urruti and Ethan Finley are the other two whose contracts are up. So Maxi Urruti, I'm going to say don't renew. I think you're probably in the same boat there.
Absolutely in the same boat for both production and salary. He's one of the most expensive players on the roster.
And then what about Ethan Finley?
I feel like Ethan Finley is obviously solid contributor to the team. I think it comes down to the number. Like, how much is it going to cost to get him back? How much has Ethan Finley put down roots here? I feel like he's kind of the kind of guy that can kind of do kind of go wherever he wants to go and the situation he wants to be in. So I would like to have him back on the Austin FC side of things. I wouldn't be shocked if he was not.
Yeah, he is currently on guaranteed compensation is $425,000, which for like a guy of his of his numbers and like his tenure in MLS, I think that's fair up until this point. But he's also 33 years old. And so I think it would be like realistic and reasonable for him to take a bit of a pay cut. I think it's really just going to depend on like what else do they have in the pipeline? How big of a pay cut is he willing to take? But I think it's kind of a toss up at this point. Like, I think it's maybe more likely he does resign just because like he was a decent player this year, and like to come back on a lower number and be a bit more of a role player next year, like that would be a valuable thing to have. But I think you're right. I think the number is going to kind of be the dictator of it all.
All right. Well, how about option year players? I'm looking at, cause I could see your list. Like, you have nobody on the option year on the renew. So you're going to clear a lot of, is this your take or what you think they will do?
Maybe both. Okay. So let's list the names here again. I hope I have all these right. Adam Lundqvist, Charlie Asensio, Hector Jimenez, Alex Ring, Memo Rodriguez, Sofyan Jafal, and Will Bruin. Oh, Will Bruin and Alfonso Ocampo-Chavez. A couple of these guys are Austin FC 2 players, but have first team contracts. So they are still taking up roster spots that we could use on other players. I mean, of this list, like, who would you pick up?
Well, I don't think it's going to happen for a lot of reasons, but Alex Ring, again, on the right deal, a non-DP deal, still, I think he adds a lot to the team, particularly if I had a spot on the field and leave him in that, like if there's not injuries at center back or anything like that, like he's one, you know, I would love to have seen something from Sophie Schiffall, but he just doesn't seem like it's going to happen for him in Austin. And now he's at an age where if he's ever going to thrive, it needs to be somewhere else. And Adam Lundqvist is fairly expensive too, correct?
Let's see. I can look it up real quick.
I would kind of put him on the maybe pile, but again, that's dependent upon what he makes.
He's on 400,000, which
400 is quite a bit for what he's like, basically a backup fullback on both sides.
If it's a guy that you're like fairly certain isn't going to compete for a starting position, and maybe he could again, and maybe they believe that about him. But if they don't believe that about him, I think that's a tough number to lock in for a guaranteed bench player.
Yeah. I mean, Hector Jimenez, you know, he's making $85,000. If he wants to sit on the end of the bench and play a couple hundred minutes for another $85,000 next year, sure.
Yeah, I was talking to, you mentioned Moises Chiyan earlier at the press conference. I was talking to him last night at the Austin FC 2 watch party, and he brought up a good point that, like, I think a lot of people, the obvious choice for Alex Ring would be to go back to Finland, but he's not going to make more money in Finland, even if he takes a pay cut here. Like, the best financial choice for him would probably be to stay in Austin. Maybe there's another MLS team that would take a bit of a flyer on him if he really doesn't want to be here. But as far as like finance goes, like staying, even if they don't take it. So he has an option year. If Austin FC exercises that option, that number is already set, and it is likely the same or higher than what he's on now. And so that's out of the question, right? Like, Austin's not going to pick up that option. The only way Alex Ring stays is if Austin declines the option and then offers a different contract and Ring accepts that. And so it comes down to, hey, does Alex Ring want to be here? And like, what are his priorities? He's a guy who walked away from the national team, the Finnish national team, before he had to. Probably would have gotten a lot more caps, but he just said, I'm tired of traveling during my time off. I want to spend more time with my family. I'm going to prioritize that time over national team caps. And so maybe he would take a pay cut to just go back home and say, like, we're done. We're going to go back home to Finland, and that's going to be the rest of our lives. And that, like, that wouldn't surprise me, but I wouldn't also wouldn't be super surprised to see him take another year or something here, just because it's the best payday he's going to get.
Is there anybody else on this list? I mean, you have them on lists. It's not renewed. Is there anybody that's interesting to you that you want to talk about in any more depth?
Memo Rodriguez is an interesting one just because he is relatively cheap. Maybe he would be a guy that they renew for another year just because like he could be another role player. But I think what we've seen from him this year, like if they think they can get someone better, I think they will. But if they just don't see any prospects of that happening, maybe they just take him on another year just because he's a cheap, decent option there.
Yeah. So one thing that we should talk about with these option players in the calendar is that the clubs have until December 1st to tell the league which players will have their options exercised and which ones won't. Those all get published by the clubs. It seems like a lot of times they get published way ahead of that date for the teams that don't make the playoffs.
Yeah, they tell the league, but they don't tell us.
But remember that just because somebody doesn't get their option exercised does not mean they're gone. That's what I was thinking about in the ring point. Like, he may very well show up on that list. He, more likely than not, is going to show up on that list on December 1st. That doesn't mean his career in Austin is over. It's like, don't overreact. We'll get to this when we get to that point in time. But like, don't overreact to like the news that somebody's out of contract, their option is up, because that just means what it means. I mean, it means there's still the potential that they'll play in Austin next year.
Yeah. Let's go to the unknowns here. So Danny Pereira was a Generation Adidas player. With the Generation Adidas contract, you're guaranteed 3 years. And so those 3 years are up this season. I've struggled to find any hard information on this, but I'm pretty sure that you can add option years to that 3-year contract. And just the fact that we've not heard anything at all about Danny's future at the moment, it would surprise me if his contract was up right now and they don't have an option or don't have something else worked out. And so he's one that, like, if we're talking about what we hope their contracts look like, I hope they have an option year on that and they're just going to exercise the option and keep him for at least one more year. Do you think there's a possibility that's not the case? Like, do you think he might be able to leave at the end of this one?
I would just be shocked if that was the case. We wouldn't have heard anything. I mean, and with the players that Austin's renewed and knowing it's a GA player, he's probably not making a ton. Like, I would have expected them to have announced a deal before if such a thing was needed.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that makes sense. The other ones I have on the list here, Johan Romagna, who is on loan at, is it Olimpia in Paraguay? I think it's Olimpia, one of the big teams in Paraguay. Tom Bogert, in a recent article or tweet, I think it was an article, dropped this little nugget that I don't think we had seen previously, but he said that there is an option to buy Romagna at the end of the season. I think that would be the best scenario for all parties involved if we could permanently move him on. He seems to be getting minutes there and getting just like in a better situation for himself. I don't see him being a great long-term option here based on what we saw. So like, I know a lot of people really like him and would want him to come back. I think maybe he would have been useful just as a center back to have on the roster this season. But as far as long-term, like, I think moving on from him would be the best case scenario.
I think that's true, especially now that the coach thing is settled, because we obviously know that he and Josh Wolf didn't get along. Yeah, that was Tom Bogert's, I think it was his like off-season recap article, if I remember right, where he goes through every team once their season ends and talks about sort of what that might look like for next year. And that ended up in there.
The other person on this list is Rodney Redes, who, again, we don't know what his contract looks like, but I think there's been some rumors that it was a 3-year deal. If that's the case, then his contract will be up this season. I mean, again, I think this is a no-brainer. If his contract is over, let him walk away.
Yeah, I don't think that the Rodney Redes redemption arc we were all hoping for early in the 2023 season is going to pan out. So I agree.
I think that is all of the unclear ones. So let's move on to folks who are still under contract. Of the folks who are still under contract, I have like a pretty substantial list of folks that I think we should try to sell. Again, this is this is not me saying like sell all of these people, because that's just unrealistic. Like, we're not going to be able, I think I have 1, 2, 3, 4. I think I have 7 names here that I would like them to be shopping.
You can't actually field an 11 of people you want Austin to keep, I think, if I read this chart right. But
no,
I'd like
you to can't.
See how this is going to go. Yeah,
I just know that like of this list of 7, like I'll call it success if we can sell one of them.
Okay.
Because that's the reality. Like, there's not a super hot market for any of these people. And so it's going to be hard to move any of them. But I think we should try regardless, based on what Burrell has said about our cap space situation and the performance of these players. If we get an offer for some of them, we should strongly consider it. First on my list, actually, yeah, it's, people are maybe going to be mad about some of these, but first one I have here is Matt Persano. He's a backup goalkeeper taking a senior roster spot, I believe, and hasn't made the bench for the last handful of games. They straight up said Loss is
not better than Damian Loss. Yeah.
And so, if that's the way they're going to approach this position, it's not just like, because we talked about this throughout the year. It's like, yeah, Loss is better than Bersano, but they want Loss to play on the second team. So Bersano's the guy to sit on the bench. And that's clearly not the way they're looking at it anymore. And so if he's taking up a senior roster spot and not even making the bench, like, I think we should try to get rid of him. Can we? Probably not. I don't think, like, there's not a hot market for backup goalkeepers that aren't even making the bench, right?
No, I don't think so.
And then his salary is big enough that, like you say, like loan him to a USL team. Like, a USL team's not going to pay him that much. Like, they won't. He's cheap for MLS, but he's too expensive for what he is and like any other options. So like, I don't know if they can move him, but if they can, they should. I have Nick Lima on this list. Again, this one maybe is less unlikely than maybe I originally thought here, because we don't know what his contract situation is, but he was not on the free agency list released by the Players Union this year, and he is eligible for, like, he's been in the league long enough and is old enough to be eligible for free agency once his contract is over. So since he's not on that list, it means he has one more guaranteed year. I think we paid like $500K in GAM or something for him. We'd probably not be able to get that much, but since he's probably only got 1 year left on the contract, like, I could see there being like a realistic trade within MLS for a guy like Nick Lima. And like, Nick Lima has been fine. Like, I think he's been our best option for large stretches of the last 3 seasons, but I think for what this team wants to do and playing in this system, I think he is one of the limiting factors to this offense being successful.
All right. I want to talk about the next 2 guys on your list. Owen Wolf, I think it's on that sell trade. If you can, it's because you believe that there's a market for him, that he can be sold internationally for a profit.
Yeah,
he's some cash in.
Probably the only player I have on this list where I'm like, yeah, there actually probably is a decent market for this player. I think the problem with Owen is that there's probably a correct belief that his market value is not peaked yet. And so like another year in MLS, and like probably like at the age, like if he's going to take a big jump, these are the years where he's going to do it. And probably next year would be a more opportune time to sell him to Europe, which is where everyone kind of thinks like his trajectory is headed. I think he'd be a useful player for this team next year, but there's so much baggage with that at this point that it might be better for all parties involved if he could get that move sooner rather than later. But like I said, I don't think his market value is peaked yet, and they're going to be hesitant to just sell him for pennies when probably have a pretty good belief he'll be worth some real money at some point.
All right. And then one more guy. I guess we could probably move on from this topic because we've still got Austin FC2 and San Jose to talk about. And Miliano Rigoni, sell trade if you can. How realistic do you think this if you can is?
Not very. I mean, with his salary, it's going to be tough to find a place to take him without us still like paying a big chunk of that. If they could work out some type of deal where they could move him on a loan or something like that, maybe you take it, but it needs to be a situation where we're freeing up that DP spot. We're actually freeing up roster space and not just a roster spot, if that makes sense. Like, I think it's going to be tough to do that, I think. But again, if you can, you should do it. A couple of other names I have on here. Jean Kolmanich, I think, is a guy, like, again, like, probably not realistic him coming off of an injury. Could he be a useful player? Sure. But, like, I think at this point we've seen enough to know, like, he's probably not going to be, like, a great MLS player. I'd love for him to prove me wrong, but if they got a big option for him or a big offer for him, take it. Another one, Kip Keller. Maybe this is too early. I'm kind of done with the Kip Keller experiment, especially in this offensive system, which we've are now committed to. It's not going to change. I think if we can move Kip Keller somewhere else, we should. Any other names that you would add to this list as far as players who are still under contract?
Still under contract that I would get rid of?
And I think there's some people who, like, I maybe would, but I think are just so unrealistic that I just didn't even entertain the thought.
So we're both looking at Giassi Zardes. Is it able to write down this spreadsheet?
I think Zardes, like Matt Hedges, Cascante, maybe you could trade within MLS. Yeah.
No, I wouldn't argue with any of these that you have on there. I think these are the guys that you either want to keep or have to keep.
Yeah. Any other thoughts on this before we move on?
Mal, let's go ahead and review a game and preview a game.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Austin FC 2, and then we'll also do our San Jose preview as for the last game of the season. Hang tight, we'll be right back with that.
Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by Covert Ford. The Coverts have been meeting the needs of local car buyers for 114 years because of their service, financial expertise, and support after the sale.
In addition to supporting car buyers, Covert's an important part of the soccer community and the official automotive partner of Austin FC.
We want to talk to you this week about a 2023 Ford F-150 Supercrew XLT, stock number 2230514. This has an MSRP of $69,400. You can get a manufacturer rebate of $2,250 and dealer discount of $10,157 on that, which will lead you to be able to lease it for $389 a month. For 36 months, you can visit covertford.com or see the dealer for all details on that deal.
If you're in the market for a new or used vehicle, be sure to check out covertford.com.
Moon Tower Soccer is brought to you by Sage Wilson Realty. Thanks, Sage Wilson, for being a supporter all year long and giving some tickets away, and we look forward to continue working with you in the future.
Again, this is made possible by Sage Wilson Realty. If you or someone you know are in need of Sage real estate advice in Austin, talk to our friends at Sage Wilson Realty. Be sure to check them out online at sagewilson.com. All right, we are back. We're going to talk about Austin FC 2. So they ended up beating Colorado Rapids 2 in penalties after a 0-0 match in 120 minutes. And they are now the Western Conference champions. They're going to be playing next Sunday against Columbus Crew 2, who are the reigning champions of MLS Next Pro. That's going to be Sunday, 4 p.m. Central Time in Columbus. I think there's some watch party stuff in the works already. I think it's going to be at Hop Squad.
I believe that's right. I think it'll be all the supporters, and there's a decent, well, I don't know about a huge group. There was a decent group that traveled to Colorado, and it looks like there's some people that want to go to Columbus again, but apparently flights are very expensive to Columbus for some reason. So may not be as many as in Colorado, but it's fun to see fans traveling for Austin FC too.
Let's go through this game real quick. So CJ Fodre was with the team this week. He ended up being on the bench. Micah Burton also back from national team duty. So a couple of players we either knew weren't going to be there or hoped might be there last week were there this week, both on the bench. It was a pretty tense 0-0 game. Maybe not the like most exciting, but I think tense is a fair word to say. Colorado had some big stretches where they had Austin pinned down, but like mostly we're looking to win this game in transition. And Austin had a lot of the ball, but really struggled to get through really, really compact Colorado defense. They were kind of packing it in, really organized, compact defense, and would look to spring on the break with Kevin Cabral's twin brother, whose name I can't remember, Remy Cabral, and Darren Yappe as kind of those like front runners on that line and really dangerous players. And Austin did a good job of kind of limiting those guys in those moments. I think Cheikh Torre missed one big chance. There's maybe a couple of other half chances. And then Colorado maybe had like one or two decent chances, but it was pretty cagey other than that. CJ Fodre comes on in the second half, but unable to really make a huge difference. They go to extra time, still nothing happening. They go to penalties. The first one, I think it's Val Noel takes it. The keeper gets a hand on it, and it like barely bounces over the
barely
line.
Right, like, because in the like, moment you couldn't even tell like necessarily what had happened, and the reactions were weird.
Yeah, the keeper ends up saving it again off of the bounce and throwing it out, but the assistant ref is there watching and raises the flag saying like, yeah, that crossed the line, we're good. And there didn't seem to be too much protest from the keeper, so I think it was probably a fair one. Damian Loss saves the first Colorado shot from Oliver Larraz, who's I think Colorado had three players on the next pro best 11, and this guy was one of them, probably their best player this year. He goes right down the middle, Loss doesn't move, and saves it, immediately turns around and starts chirping at the crowd, and it's like talking about Damian Loss being like a pure competitor. This came out in this shootout here. Joe Hafferty scores his. Alonso Ramirez scores his. Darren Yappe comes up and takes probably one of the stupidest penalties I've ever seen, where he does a short run up, but then still does like the little choppy feet at the beginning of his run up. And I think it like kind of eliminates the purpose. Like if you're doing a short run up, you're going to do one step and just bang it. And he instead like shortens his run and isn't able to get as much power on it, and Loss saves
this one.
He kind
of telegraphs it at that point because the way he's moving. Yeah.
So I thought that was dumb, but Loss did well to save it. Jonathan Santillan, who came on right before the end of the game, like this was, it very much looked like we're going to penalties. Who do we want to put on while we still have a chance? Santillan was the guy who did it. He runs up, takes one of the best panenkas I've ever seen. It was beautiful. And I think one of the reasons why like panenkas sometimes fail, and it, for those who don't know, panenka is like whenever you just like chip it really softly down the middle and try to make the keeper look silly by diving and the ball just kind of floats in. I think one of the reasons why they fail sometimes is because you can read the body language and they're like not putting a lot of force into it, and so the keeper will just freeze and kind of wait for it. Santillan runs up and like does a full wind up and it looks like he's gonna smash it, and he just like just able to scoop his foot right under it and puts a ton of backspin on it. And so like his body motion looked like he was going to smash it, but then he strikes it so perfectly that it just floats into the back of the goal. And the danger is you're going to hit it too high. But he perfect execution is like the most beautiful way to end a shootout. And then they celebrated accordingly right after that.
Yeah, they did. I thought he was going to kill Damian Loss right after that. I think somebody said that online too. It might've been Lincoln. That mentioned that like if wish he'd have been as easy on the keeper, as easy on Loss as he was on the kick. But yeah, it was cool. They got to jump up and down that super weird looking trophy, and then they took it to the crowd too. Like the away fans came down in the corner, and they were able to celebrate with the traveling Austin FC2 fans, which was really cool. So now obviously the results are very different between the first team and second team. But the one thing I was interested in your take on is like, they're still playing the same kind of game, right? I mean, this is a system. Like, you're trying to build players from the academy all the way up to the first team, and it's a possession-based system, but, like, Austin FC2's matches are so much lower scoring. They're by far the best defensive team in the league, but they're also just don't generate a ton of chances on offense. Like, what do you see about the difference between the two teams that make them this way?
Yeah, I mean, I think... So they do like to have possession, and it's not exactly what the first team does, but very close to it. And like the structure and the principles are still very similar. And so I think a lot of it has to do with like executing against that structure, and then also just personnel. And then of course the opposition is going to have a lot to do with it too. But I think part of why they don't score as much is, again, like whenever you try to play possession, you have a lot of the ball, teams will end up bunkering against you, and that is just a hard thing to beat. Like at any level, at any league, any competition in the world, that's a hard thing to get through. On the defensive side, I mean a lot of it is whenever you keep the ball like that, an important thing is what's called rest defense, but it's like how you're set up to recover if you lose the ball. And that's the thing the first team has been really bad at. And not only are they like get out of shape and are in bad shape, but the players who are there to then try to stop it when we do lose the ball are also not very good at that. And I think Austin FC too has done a good job of having decent shape whenever they are in possession, and then B, having players who are really good at kind of cutting those moments out. And so two pretty athletic center backs at the beginning of the season, it was Sal Mazzaferro and Kip Keller. And then later on, Mazzaferro and Joe Hafferty, who both are like move pretty well. Mazzaferro has decent size and can win a lot of stuff in the air. And then you also have Touré, who runs quite well as one of the fullbacks. Alonso Ramirez has been pretty sturdy in the midfield there as far as winning balls and stuff like that. So when you look at the personnel comparison to what they have versus what the first team has, Danny Pereira is not really a ball winner in those moments. He likes to get forward and kind of be involved in the attack, but also gets caught out of position sometimes and isn't in a position to affect transition defense. We have mostly slow center backs or center backs who aren't center backs. Our fullbacks get pretty high and are often caught out of position as well. And so that's really what it is. It's like they're trying to do the same thing, but to different degrees of effectiveness based on those things I just mentioned. And I think a lot of people have like taken that conclusion to say, well, we should just play the Austin FC 2 players on the first team. I was like, well, I don't think that would work either, because
it's like relative to the quality of play that they're playing against. Like Sal Mazzaferro and Joe Hafferty are really good Austin FC 2 center backs, and it helps to have Damien Loss behind him, you know, playing against attacking forces from MLS Next Pro teams. But yeah, that does not necessarily translate to the first team for sure.
Yeah, like Sal and Joe last night were giving everything they had to stop Yappy and Cabral. Yappy got some MLS minutes this year, but as soon as they signed another guy, they sent him right back down. And so like that's a good comparison. Like Yappy was like he's still very young and will probably be good one day, like good enough to play MLS or higher than that. But at this moment, he is not good enough to be a consistent contributor on an MLS team. And he is giving these guys a run for their money at this level. I think that's a good gauge of saying like, okay, as good as these guys are at this level, very few of them are now or will ever be good enough to play in MLS.
All right. Well, you want to preview San Jose really quickly, a match that means almost nothing to Austin, but as Ethan Finley reminds us, may mean a lot to some individual Austin FC players.
Yeah. So San Jose drew Dallas this last weekend. They're now sitting in ninth place. So they're in the last spot that gets to play in that wild card game. The two spots below them are held by Minnesota and Kansas City, both on 41 points, and they play each other this weekend. And so those two teams will, like, I think a draw doesn't do anything for Minnesota or Kansas City. So they'll both want to win. They'll be going after this game. And so
they have to win. And then there's a lot, you know, Portland, Dallas, and San Jose are all on 43. So it's very possible that the winner Sporting and Kansas City and Minnesota United will make it out. So like that actually may be a really exciting match in terms of just like people playing to win.
Yeah, absolutely. As far as Austin's involvement here, I mean, a chance to play spoiler and knock out San Jose isn't nothing, right? Like this is a team there's been a lot of like pretty spicy matchups with. I think a lot of the Austin players would relish in knocking San Jose out of the playoff rounds, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, just all the way to like to Brad Stuber shoving a guy to the ground in the first season. That was against San Jose, I think, right?
Yeah, it was. Along with several other moments similar to that. But what else is there to look forward to in this game from an Austin perspective?
Well, how do you think Austin plays it? Like, do you think Josh Wolf just runs out as the best 11 and does the best they can for that match to have something to build off at the end of the year? Do you think maybe there's a little bit of a youth movement? I mean, how do you see this going?
Yeah, I really don't know. I'm kind of expecting it to be a combination of those things where it's like, okay, like maybe someone like Fodre. Well, I don't know. Will they keep him down with the second team to play in that final? Or
I think he's got to be an option there. Yeah. Honestly, I don't think that I'd be surprised if we saw like a whole lot different from Josh. He does not seem like the kind of coach to, it seems like another week of being able to like establish a system and do their thing and like coach and train the way he wants to coach and train is probably the biggest advantage to him. So I don't see a lot of changes coming out of this lineup.
I do think that they're like, and these may not be obvious based on the lineup that we see get run out, but I would be surprised if there weren't some element of giving a few targeted players a chance to further their case in winning a contract for next season.
Okay.
And so I could see, I don't know, like Ethan Finley, they probably know what they want to know about him, but maybe like Memo Rodriguez, like that would be the kind of guy that maybe they're saying like, show us that you deserve to stay here. But there's like, I think most of them, they probably like have their minds made up about to a pretty high degree. And so I don't know that there's a lot of cases there really. So yeah, I think there probably is a bit of an eye towards next season, but again, like, I don't think that's going to be super obvious based on the lineup that we see.
Is there anything else to cover on this match? Feels like we know San Jose. We've seen what we've seen out of Austin. We know Austin's super unpredictable. And I guess we could just hopefully, you know, enjoy Austin playing the role of the spoiler.
Yeah, I think that's about it. And then, yeah, look forward to the offseason.
Yeah. Let's get on the offseason. That's where hope springs eternal again. And I feel like
that's right.
There's all the reason in the world for Austin to think that there are going to be some changes, maybe not as many as we would like, maybe more than Rodolfo Burrell is willing to let folks know. And we'll be here to cover it all.
All right. Before we wrap up, we'd like to remind you to rate, review, and subscribe. We're still doing our donations for reviews. So leave us a written review wherever you listen to this show, and we will give $5 to Community First Village. If you want to continue the conversation, come find us on Twitter at LVAHero87, at JBentley_ATX, and at Moon Tower Soccer on Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And then check out the Patreon. We appreciate your support for the folks who already signed up for that. And then we encourage you to support Phil West at verdealday.substack.com/moontower. And with that /moontower, you'll get a 20% discount. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week to review the San Jose match, cover whatever other Austin FC news happens. And then we're also going to be joined by the two original voices of Austin FC, Adrian Healy and Michael LaHood, for kind of like our end of season rundown. So we're very excited about that and hope you guys tune in for it. Until then, I'm Landon Cottom.
I'm Jeremiah Bentley.
We'll catch you next time. When no one is around.
Thank for nothing, see you never.
La gente.
Oh my God.